Welcome to the debate. Imagine swallowing an invisible microscopic fiber today and then feeling perfectly healthy. You just go about your life for 40 years.
Yeah, literally decades.
Decades, right. And then, seemingly out of nowhere, a tumor begins to mimic a routine digestive issue or maybe a persistent cough. And that is the terrifying, really counterintuitive reality of mesothelium.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a devastating, highly aggressive cancer that is fundamentally linked to asbestos exposure. But when we look at how the medical and legal communities actually categorize and tackle this disease, we see two entirely distinct frameworks, pulling in opposite directions.
Right. And I think it's important to note that the tension between these two frameworks, it isn't just an academic exercise. It sits at the very heart of the clinical reality. I mean, it dictates everything from the patient's immediate treatment options to their ultimate prognosis and even their legal standing.
Exactly. So the central question we are exploring today is this: when evaluating the true clinical nature, the treatment viability, and the prognosis of mesothelioma, which is the primary determinative factor? Is it the anatomical, geographical location of the tumor within the body, or is it the histological, biological behavior of its underlying cell type?
It's a huge distinction.
It really is, and I will be arguing that the anatomical location is the primary driver of this disease. The geography dictates the initial route of the asbestos exposure. It dictates the entire cascade of symptoms. And most crucially, it rigidly defines the physical boundaries of what medical interventions are even possible in the operating room.
And, well, I will be arguing that the histological cell type is the ultimate arbiter of the disease. Because while the physical location certainly sets the stage, the room the cancer happens to be sitting in, it is the intrinsic cellular aggressiveness of the tumor that actually dictates how it will behave. Whether the cancer is epithelioid, sarcomatoid, or biphasic, that overrides the geographical advantages or disadvantages, ultimately driving the response to treatment and the survival timeline.
Okay, let's start with the sheer physical dominance of anatomy. Because mesothelioma's entire identity is intrinsically tied to where it develops within the mesothelium. I mean, the patient's journey is entirely defined by which specific internal cavity is breached. We basically see four distinct variations.
Right.
The vast majority, 75 to 80% of cases, are pleural. That happens when inhaled asbestos fibers make their way deep into the pulmonary system. Then you have peritoneal mesothelium, making up about 15 to 20%, where fibers are swallowed or migrate through lymphatic channels down into the abdominal cavity.
And then, of course, you have the extreme outliers: pericardial mesothelioma, which accounts for less than 1%, and testicular, with, I think, fewer than 100 cases ever reported in the literature.
Yeah, fewer than 100. It's incredibly rare. But look at how heavily that physical location sets the absolute boundaries of what an oncologist can realistically do. The terrain dictates the medical weapons that can be deployed. Let's contrast two specific locations: peritoneal and pericardial.
Okay, sure.
In peritoneal mesothelioma, the abdominal cavity provides massive physical space. Because of that specific anatomy, surgeons can execute cytoreductive surgery combined with heated intraperitoneal chemotherapy, CRHIPEC.
Right, a highly invasive but effective procedure.
Very effective. They have the literal room to physically excise visible tumors across the abdominal lining and then circulate heated chemotherapy directly into the cavity. And because the anatomy allows for this aggressive physical intervention, median survival can jump to an astonishing 40 to 92 months.
I see where you're going with the space argument, but...
Let me just finish the contrast really quickly because it highlights the limitation perfectly. Take pericardial mesothelioma. The tumor is situated directly on the pericardium, right against the myocardium.
Right on the heart.
Exactly. Complete surgical resection is almost never achievable due to the sheer proximity to the beating heart. I mean, you can't aggressively scrape or resect that tissue without catastrophic risk. So survival for pericardial patients is measured in mere months. The underlying biology or cell type didn't change the survival dynamic in that comparison. The anatomical real estate did, You can't treat what you can't safely cut.
Well, I come at it from a different way. While it is undeniably true that the anatomical location sets the physical boundaries of the operating room, the microscopic cell type is the actual engine driving the disease. Without knowing the histology, relying on anatomical location provides a deeply incomplete and, frankly, a potentially misleading picture of the patient's future.
Misleading?
Yeah, misleading. The biology rewrites the rules of engagement regardless of the geography.
So you're arguing that histology matters more than whether a surgeon can actually physically access the tumor?
Precisely. Let's look at the three main cell types to understand why. First, you have the epithelioid type, which accounts for 50 to 70% of cases. Now, these cells are cohesive. They possess strong cellular adhesion molecules. Think of it like molecular Velcro.
Okay, molecular Velcro.
Yeah, they stick together in uniform sheets, which is exactly why they are less likely to metastasize quickly and why they respond best to localized treatment. Then, at the other extreme, you have the sarcomatoid cell type. This is the rarest, but it's highly aggressive. Sarcomatoid cells undergo a structural change where they shed that Velcro. They become disorganized, spindle-shaped, and they infiltrate deeply into surrounding healthy stromal tissue.
Right, they scatter.
Exactly. And finally, you have the biphasic type, which is a heterogeneous mix of both, where the prognosis swings entirely on the ratio of the two.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective. You're focusing on the biological resistance to treatment, which is valid. But you can't even initiate a treatment if the physical mechanics of the anatomy don't allow it.
But my point is this. You might have a favorable tumor location, like the peritoneal cavity, that technically allows for that impressive CRS pipex surgery you mentioned earlier. The space is there. The surgeon can get to it. But if those cells are sarcomatoid, their aggressive biological behavior will simply ignore your geographical advantage.
Well, I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning, because I think you are downplaying the sheer mechanical efficacy of something like HIPPEC. When you circulate chemotherapy, heated to around 42 degrees Celsius, directly into the peritoneal cavity, you aren't just relying on cellular cohesion.
Sure, the heat plays a role.
A massive role. The heat actually alters the lipid bilayer of the cancer cells. It increases the permeability of the tumor tissue, causing vasodilation and allowing those cytotoxic drugs to penetrate millimeters deep into the microscopic disease left behind after the cytoreduction. The physical location allows us to change the localized temperature, which manipulates the biology.
I don't disagree on the mechanism of HIPPEC. I mean, heat absolutely denatures proteins and increases drug penetration. But I'm sorry, I just don't buy that it supersedes the histology. Let me tell you why. You are equating the ability to perform a radical localized therapy with long-term biological success.
I think they're deeply linked.
Linked, yes. But let's shift to the pleural cavity to really illustrate this. The chest cavity provides the physical space to perform an extrapleural pneumonectomy, the EPP.
Right, an incredibly demanding procedure. You're removing the entire lung, the pleural lining, the hemidiaphragm, and the pericardium on that side.
Exactly. It is the ultimate geographical clearance. You literally remove the entire anatomical neighborhood. But if a pleural tumor is overwhelmingly sarcomatoid, the surgeon can perform a flawless EPP, scrape the chest wall perfectly, and flood the cavity with pemetrexed and cisplatin.
Okay.
But because sarcomatoid cells are not cohesive, because they are microscopically invasive, systemic insurgents, basically, they have likely already shed into the lymphatic system or microscopic recesses before the first incision was even made.
Well, microscopic spread is always a risk, yes.
Clearing the terrain didn't actually solve the problem. The biology restricts the efficacy of your physical tools.
That's an interesting point, though I would frame it quite differently. You're treating the disease strictly from the moment of clinical intervention onward. But mesothelioma is a disease defined by a timeline spanning decades. The anatomical location is what actually defines the entire lived experience of the patient leading up to that surgical table.
How so?
Well, the latency period, the exposure pathway, and the massive diagnostic hurdles they face before treatment is even discussed, those are entirely geographically dictated.
The underlying inflammation caused by the asbestos fibers is the same mechanism, though, regardless of where they land.
The mechanism of genetic mutation might be similar, sure. but the physiological manifestation is wildly different based on where those fibers settled. Let's unpack the diagnostic journey. If you have pleural mesothelium, the patient experiences pleural effusion. The tumor irritates the mesothelial lining, causing massive fluid buildup in the pleural space, physically compressing the lung.
Right, respiratory distress.
Yes, the patient literally cannot take a deep breath without sharp pain. They develop a dry, crackling cough and hypoxia. Now, contrast that with peritoneal mesothelium. We know inhaled fibers can be trapped in mucus, cleared by the mucociliary escalator, coughed up, and swallowed. Or they penetrate the lung tissue and migrate via the lymphatic system into the abdomen.
Right, the migration pathways are fascinating.
Yes, and once there, the geographical location allows this cancer to act as a diagnostic Trojan horse. The patient experiences ascites fluid in the abdomen, unexplained weight loss, and changes in bowel habits. Because it's in the peritoneal cavity, it routinely masks itself as irritable bowel syndrome, a simple hernia, or a routine gastrointestinal disorder.
It gets misdiagnosed constantly.
Exactly. This anatomical camouflage delays the accurate diagnosis drastically, sometimes by years. The way the disease physically interacts with the patient's daily life, how it hides from primary care physicians, is a purely anatomical phenomenon.
That's a compelling argument. But have you considered how the cell type dictates the velocity at which all of those geographically distinct symptoms escalate?
Velocity? What do you mean?
Yes, the speed of deterioration. I will readily concede that the specific nature of the symptoms, you know, a crackling cough versus a bowel obstruction, is determined by location. A peritoneal tumor might indeed mimic an inguinal hernia initially, but what dictates whether that hernia stays manageable for 6 months or explodes into a massive, debilitating ascites accumulation in a matter of 3 weeks?
It is the underlying histology.
But the fluid buildup is a mechanical reaction to the tumor bulk on the peritoneal lining.
It is, but the rate of that bulk expansion is driven by the cell type. It's the biphasic or sarcomatoid ratio that acts as the accelerator. The location determines what the symptom is, but the cell type determines the speed of the patient's clinical crash. And in a disease like mesotheliomoma, velocity is everything.
I see. If the cells are highly cohesive epithelioid, the tumor grows locally and relatively slowly. The fluid buildup might be gradual enough to allow for multiple diagnostic interventions, drainage, and a deliberate treatment plan.
Right, buying time.
Exactly. But if they are sarcomatoid, the cellular replication and local invasion happen so rapidly that the patient's functional status, their ECOG performance status, crashes before a treatment plan can even be formulated. The anatomical symptom differences become almost a moot point when the biological velocity simply overwhelms the patient.
I hear that, but when we look at how the medical community actually categorizes hard prognostic data, the actual survival numbers they give to a family, they don't start with velocity. They start with location.
Well, they use both.
They do. But the broad, reliable prognostic buckets are deeply geographical. The median survival for pleural mesothelioma across the board is roughly 12 to 21 months. For peritoneal, if they aren't surgical candidates, it's 6 to 12 months. But leaps to that 40 to 92 month window with the CR-CPEC intervention. Testicular mesothelioma? Due to the anatomical isolation of the disease, an orchiectomy provides a median survival of 24 months or longer. Anatomy creates the definitive statistical baseline for survival.
A baseline, perhaps, but certainly not the final definitive word.
It is the foundation of everything else. And, you know, we cannot ignore the legal ramifications, which are inextricably linked to the clinical diagnosis here. Mesothelioma isn't just a medical tragedy. It is almost always a toxic tort claim.
Yeah, the litigation aspect is huge.
It is. In legal cases, establishing the route of exposure is absolutely crucial for proving liability. Was the asbestos inhaled directly on a naval shipyard, or were fibers ingested through contaminated secondary sources? That vital question of causation is fundamentally answered by the location of the tumor, pleural versus peritoneal. The geography of the disease maps directly onto the legal strategy for compensation.
But the legal and medical communities both recognize that location alone is vastly insufficient.
A patient's pathology report must specify both the anatomical location and the histological cell type. Why? Because the microscopic information is essential for establishing the severity of your diagnosis and the expected impact on your life. Yes, the location establishes the initial route of exposure for the lawyers, but the compensation, the granular understanding of the patient's actual suffering, and the true expected shortening of their life is quantified by the histology.
You're saying the cell type quantifies the medical and legal damage in a way the location doesn't?
Exactly. Now let's look closely at biphasic tumors for a second. They are a literal microscopic tug of war within the same patient. The tumor is a heterogeneous mixture of both cohesive epithelioid cells and aggressive sarcomatoid cells. The entire prognosis swings entirely based on the ratio of those two cellular populations.
Right. A tumor might be 80% epithelioid and 20% sarcomatoid, or, you know, vice versa.
Exactly. Now imagine patient A and patient B. They both have pleural mesothelioma. They share the exact same geographical diagnosis. They both inhaled asbestos at the same job site. They both presented with pleural effusions. They check all your anatomical boxes.
Okay. Tracking.
But if patient A has a biphasic tumor that is 90% epithelioid and patient B has a biphasic tumor that is 90% sarcomatoid, their clinical realities are worlds apart.
Sure, patient A might be a candidate for a pleurectomy with decortication, while patient B might be limited to palliative care.
Precisely. Their survival timelines, their response to systemic immunotherapy, and their legal claims regarding the severity of their shortened lives are completely different. The broad averages of anatomical location, that 12 to 21 month bucket you mentioned for pleural disease, are just statistical noise when you drill down to the individual. The microbiology provides the final granular resolution of the true prognosis. It overrides those broad geographical averages by dictating the actual behavior of the disease within that cavity.
You know, I think we've established a fascinating, almost paradoxical duality here. From my perspective, anatomical location undeniably serves as the absolute foundational architecture of mesothelioma. It is the physical terrain that determines the historical narrative of the disease, whether those fibers were inhaled into the pulmonary system or bypassed the lungs to migrate into the digestive tract.
Right.
It dictates the specific physical suffering the patient endures, whether that's the hypoxia of pleural disease or the diagnostic Trojan horse of peritonealitis. And crucially, it establishes the hard physical boundaries of clinical hope. A cohesive, favorable epithelioid cell means nothing if the tumor is wrapped around the myocardium, rendering the disease fundamentally inoperable from day one.
And while I acknowledge that macrophysical framework, the cellular histology represents the true biological identity of the cancer. The geography only dictates where the battle is fought. The histology dictates who you are fighting. Whether a tumor is epithelioid, sarcomatoid, or biphasic determines how aggressively that tumor will infiltrate the surrounding tissue, whether it has the molecular adhesion to stay localized, and whether those radical surgical interventions will actually result in long-term survival or just rapid systemic recurrence. The cell type is the undeniable engine of the disease's trajectory.
It seems clear that in both the clinical and legal arenas, there is a deep convergence on the necessity of both classifications. You really can't chart a path forward without both sets of intelligence. A successful compensation claim requires establishing the physical route of exposure, which is geographic, while also proving the severity and expected trajectory of the disease, which is deeply rooted in the biological cell type.
Absolutely. I mean, an oncologist wouldn't dare draft a treatment protocol, whether that's an extrapleural pneumonectomy or systemic immunotherapy, without knowing exactly where the tumor is located and exactly what kind of cells make up its bulk. The physical surgical tools are completely useless without understanding the biological enemy's makeup, and the deepest biological understanding is purely academic if the physical location prevents any safe intervention in the first place.
The intricate complexity of asbestos-related disease is truly staggering. Understanding this intersection of macroanatomy and microbiology invites a much deeper appreciation for the immense multidisciplinary challenges that oncologists face when treating these extraordinarily rare cancers. It brings us back to evaluating the entire scope of a patient's reality.
It really does.
But as to which factor, the unforgiving physical terrain of the heart and lungs, or the insidious, rapidly infiltrating behavior of a sarcomatoid cell, ultimately holds the most power over a patient's clinical journey and daily life, we will leave that for you to weigh. Thank you for joining us on today's discussion.